Hey, welcome to Politico Tech. Today's Tuesday, June 18th. I'm Stephen Overley. You can always count on Elon Musk for a tweet that gets the internet talking. And a couple of days ago, it was this one. Quote, "We should eliminate electronic voting machines. The risk of being hacked by humans or AI, while small, is still too high." Unquote. His comment followed the primary election in Puerto Rico, where a software issue led voting machines to incorrectly calculate vote totals. Now, Musk isn't alone in calling to eliminate voting machines. In fact, there's even a growing group of people who want to do away with election technology altogether and go back to the days of hand-counting ballots. Abandoning technology in 2024, I called up Pamela Smith, the president and CEO of election integrity nonprofit Verified Voting, to find out if that's even possible. Here's our conversation. Well, Pamela, welcome to the Politico Tech Podcast.
Thank you.
I was thinking about this topic over the weekend because Elon Musk posted on X that we should eliminate voting machines. What's your first thought when you see someone like Musk say that?
I think my first thought is that the public really legitimately wants to know that elections are fair. And there are still ways that elections can be strengthened, but undermining the public's ability to trust in elections is one of the dangers to democracy today. Because the public doesn't necessarily know that much about elections and how they work. And so if you get conflicting messages about risks of hacking and irregularities and never hearing how elections work, then it's hard to know where to find that ground truth. So that's the first thing that comes up for me is how can we share more about the kinds of guardrails that are in place to ensure that elections are sound?
Well, I imagine that's not going to be accomplished in, you know, a tweet, right? Especially from someone with the personality of Elon Musk. But he certainly has a lot of reach. And so I imagine when he posts something, it can really distort the narrative or change people's thinking in some ways.
Right. I think diving into what it means to get rid of election technology, you know, is that what you're saying? Get rid of all election technology. We're not really able to do that. People don't understand how many ways and places in which software and computerized systems exist in most aspects of elections. And if you don't understand what the use of election technology is, then it's easy to just throw something out there and generate some concern and mistrust and think, well, let's go back to, you know, manually counting paper ballots in all jurisdictions. And that's something that is not feasible today. But also, there are many other ways in which technology intersects with elections. So you have technology when you register to vote. You have technology when you check in to a polling place to go vote. And often in the process of marking your ballot, and certainly in the counting of votes and more. So the systems we use have to be available and functioning correctly and reliably enough to ensure that voters can vote and that the outcome is right. And for secure elections, we need to be able to prove that that was the case. So I think understanding the question first, right, is key.
Right.
There is a law of the land that requires that every polling place have accessible voting technology in use, that for voters with disabilities who may require an electronic interface to be able to mark their ballot, that has to be there, has to be up and running. That's the law. So we're not getting rid of all machines.
When we hear the idea of eliminating voting machines, I mean, I don't quite go back to like stone tablets, but I kind of think of like those Scantron tests that we used to fill out in school or something. I mean, what is the difference in this debate between hand marked and hand counted? And as you're saying, it sounds like there's no way to completely eliminate technology from our elections.
It's an important question. The difference between hand marking a ballot, which is what voters in probably 70% of jurisdictions do today. The vast majority of voters literally hand mark a ballot. And anyone who votes by mail is hand marking their ballot.
Right.
But just because you hand mark a ballot doesn't mean you have to hand count a ballot for the election outcome to be right. Instead, you can count those ballots with scanning technology that looks for the marks on the ballot, identifies them, tallies everything up, and reports that out. And then you use a hand count in a process called an audit. It's a way to check the outcome, check to make sure that the software, the machine, got it right. And I think what most people don't know is that in most of the country, there's paper. And in most of the country, those audits are taking place after every election. We have a map on our website that shows what every single jurisdiction is using for their voting system. And if you look at the map, it shows that the vast majority is voting actually on a physical paper ballot. And that's a good thing.
We have seen, though, kind of a growing movement to go to hand-counted ballots. Is that something that is actually happening now? And has that even been shown to be effective?
There are jurisdictions that hand count paper ballots instead of machine counting them, but they tend to be very small, about 1,000 voters or fewer in a county. And most jurisdictions are much larger than that. So that is less than 1%. It's 0.2%, if I'm not wrong, of jurisdictions where they literally hand count all of their paper ballots. And if you have a small number of voters and a handful of contests, it's not hard. But I think it's really important to remember that in most jurisdictions, you vote on more contests. Where I live in California, we have as many as 30 to 50 contests in a given election. That's a lot.
Right.
And most jurisdictions are much larger than 1,000 voters or fewer. And so some states have taken steps to protect against that kind of unwieldy request or demand and have passed laws that say you can hand count, but only if you're in one of these smaller jurisdictions. And I think what people also don't know is that there is hand counting. A lot of jurisdictions, even if they use machine counts for polling place voting, they often will hand count their vote by mail ballots if there's not very many of them. And almost every jurisdiction is doing a hand count audit to check and make sure that the electronic system counted correctly. And so there are all these mechanisms in place to make sure that if something goes wrong with the technology, that we have a way not only to uncover that fact, but to correct for it. And that's what makes elections resilient, is that ability to recover from any errors that might occur in the process.
You know, it's interesting to me, a few years ago, the then president of Estonia visited Politico's offices. And at the time, she was there talking with us about efforts to digitize all sorts of government services, including elections. And now in Estonia, citizens can actually vote online. In many cases, a lot of them do. It's sort of the complete opposite of what we're kind of talking about here, right? Which is like this deep skepticism of election technology. Is that even a future that is possible in the U.S. where one day we're voting online?
I mean, I think it would be really fun to think so, because who doesn't want to vote from home in their bunny slippers, right? The challenge, though, is that as we've been talking about that physical ballot that voters get to check at the time that they're voting, and they get to look at it and make sure that it says what they want it to say, right? That it's correct. When you do internet voting, you lose that. Internet voting fails both on secrecy, privacy, and on security, because you don't have that evidence of voter intent that you can then use to confirm that the outcome was right. And I will add that Estonia has a different infrastructure than we do. They use a certain type of identification and public key infrastructure that is sort of for everybody and for all purposes, including banking and all kinds of other things. We don't have that. So voter authentication is also an issue, making sure that you're actually a legitimate voter and not some hacker from somebody's basement in another country. There are a lot of issues about using online voting that make it too challenging for secure elections in the United States at this time. There are people who work on this and research this. This is something that's been researched over 2 decades now and, you know, literally hundreds of millions of dollars put into it. But we're still not at a point where it's safe for using in public elections.
Frankly, it sounds like the public consciousness is not there yet either, right? If some folks want to go back to hand counting, I don't think fully online elections is necessarily in the comfort zone for some at this point.
I think that's true for them. I think there are some folks who think, well, I do bank online and I shop online. What's the difference? But those things are substantively different. Your online banking is not anonymous to the bank, right? Your transactions are connected with your identity. And so if something is wrong on your bank statement, you call up the bank and say, hey, what happened here? And they go, oh, we're sorry that, you know, some kind of fraud occurred. We'll take that off. And then they go and try and chase down the fraud. So there's a certain amount of fraud that happens in online transactions all the time. It's different because they can track it down, but also there is money lost. How many votes can we afford to lose? And how do you track it down when votes are anonymous? So if we didn't have the secret ballot, that might be different, but there are many challenges. And so, yeah, I think once people know about the inherent risks, that's something that they're not willing to take a chance on.
The recent discourse around this, including this Musk tweet that we've been talking about, was triggered by the primary elections in Puerto Rico, where there were some voting irregularities that happened with the machines there. And I guess the question I have for you is, as we look ahead to November, how concerned should people be about those kinds of irregularities?
I think it's important to know that, just like in other aspects of our life, Murphy's Law applies. Elections are not immune. Things do go wrong.
Sure.
But if you recognize that and you know there's no such thing as a perfect election, but what's important is that voters are able to vote, that they're not, you know, deterred by a problem that happened with the election, and that we're able to get to the right outcome no matter what, then that's what I would call a resilient election. And that's what you want. You want to be able to know that it was right at the end of the day and that there be evidence of that and that you can show the public that it was right. And so if something goes wrong, let's say something happens to the technology that's used to check voters in. Maybe a long line starts to form because they're having trouble checking in. Jurisdictions are putting in place a plan B. Maybe they check you in on paper instead of through an electronic system now. And maybe there's a hotline to the elections office. Those plan Bs and plan Cs are being put in place right now ahead of the election. If voting equipment breaks down, having emergency paper ballots, if you weren't using paper ballots directly in that jurisdiction, is important. And that's something that's in the rule book for most jurisdictions. So those kinds of things, I think, are really important. Another one of the simple guardrails is pre-election testing, which is when election officials prepare sample ballots that they run through their technology and get a count, and they can check and see if anything went wrong. They can check and see that they got all the contests on there. It's working in all the languages it might, you know, be programmed in, that it's working for every system. And that kind of pre-election testing, actually, people can usually observe that. Most people don't take time out of their day to go watch, but you can. You know, that transparency is really important.
Well, Pamela, thank you for joining us on Politico Tech.
You bet. Thank you.
That's all for today's Politico Tech. Politico Tech is off tomorrow, but we'll be back with a new episode on Thursday. In the meantime, subscribe to our newsletters, Digital Future Daily and Morning Tech. Music in today's episode comes from the mysterious Breakmaster Cylinder. Our managing producer is Annie Reese. Our producer is Afra Abdullah. And our editors are Steve Heuser, Daniela Cheslow, and Louisa Savage. I'm Stephen Overly. See you back here on Thursday.